Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, buzzers! We are so excited to join you for the episode 18 recap, because tonight we have a very special guest coming with us. It's John Emmett Tracy, but of course you know him as August Cartwright. So let's get into the show right now. Hi, everyone, and Katie, hello, how are
you? Hi, I'm good. How are you doing, Allie Kona?
Fantastic. And then, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, thank you both for having me here.
Yeah, we're super excited. So we have a chat going on, and of course, you guys at home know the deal. You are co-hosting the show with us, so any comments, concerns, or questions, pop them into the chat and let us know. But the first thing we always start off with is something called hashtag Badass Beast, which is basically who was your badass this episode. Katie and I will go first, and then John will let you ruminate a little bit and think who yours was.
Already got it, but yeah, good.
Okay, great. Well, Katie, I'll let you go first.
Well, I have a feeling I'm going to steal yours, Allie Kona, because obviously mine is Mary, because we got to see her kick ass this week and look like a badass doing it. I mean, those shoes, her ensemble. I mean, it was awesome. I had to pick her. I can't help it.
Okay, I have a backup plan. It's okay, but I'm gonna let our guest go first. John, who was yours?
So do I need a backup plan? We can't double because it was Mary for me. No question. No question, it was Mary.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was gonna say Mary, but my backup one is Alice. And the reason is because she totally manipulated the hell out of everybody tonight. It was fantastic. I love her, I love her as an actress. And my favorite moment was actually when she was with the commander through the glass and having her conversation with him, which we knew it was an act, but she was, of course, pulling the, oh, poor me. But I just loved her performance, too, because she's so great at not being acty, if that makes sense. So she's my badass beast. What about our chat? Katie, you're in charge.
Our chat basically all said Mary. And then just a comment I wanted to say, Billie Jean Girl 24, welcome back, Billie Jean Girl. She said, oh, he's alive, Cartwright. So I thought that was a fun comment. So, yes.
Hello.
So, yeah, Mary, alive, angry.
Oh, wait, okay. Ivan Soto came in with some information. I did not know this. James Bamford directed this episode. I love him.
I wasn't paying attention to the directing thing on that one, so.
He choreographs all the fights for Arrow. I don't know. Have you had a chance to meet with him, John?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. But I thought he did a great job on this episode. I really liked it. I thought the pace was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and he's also really incredible when he does shoot the fight scenes. And I think because he has that particular eye, he does a lot of one shots, like continuous stuff, and he always captures it so well. So,
well, it makes sense why there were so many great fights,
right,
in the episode. I mean, there always are, but.
You know, and it's so funny, too, because, and maybe I missed this, so you would be better at educating me, but I feel like this season, we haven't really seen Kate do any actual training. So do we know where she got all her, like, badass moves from?
That's a great question. I guess I've always assumed that it came from her military training, you know, from her cadet days. And, I mean, that's just always what's been in my mind about it, you know.
Smart. I don't know why that totally like flew over my head. All right, cool. So tonight's episode, we have a lot of stuff going on. We had the Sabatino Mafia trading organs and all sorts of cool stuff. Any highlights for you guys as far as your best moments with this particular villain?
If I may, I thought right off the start, you know, he's running down the list of organs to be traded, and then what did he say? Some disassembly required or something?
Yeah.
Good villain line. Really good villain line.
That's funny. I mean, it got pretty intense for me personally, I think, when it got to the point where they were going to auction off Batwoman to sell her. And like the one guy wanted to cut her to pieces. But I did think it was interesting that no one was curious enough to pull the mask off of her and take the opportunity. little strange to me. But since we're talking about villains also too, I want to talk about Tommy Elliot. And I'm curious to know who you guys think is a better villain. I'm asking the chat, I'm asking Katie, and of course I'm asking you, John, from a non-biased perspective. If we were to compare him and August, who do you think is a better villain?
Oh, he is, for sure. Absolutely, Tommy.
Are you just saying that?
No, he's great. He's fantastic. I mean, I think he could, there's so much he has to do in that role, and so much flipping back and forth and different sort of speeds that he has to play that at. I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
Now, who would beat up who? That's a different question. I mean, I think August might, you know, especially now that there's no face, you know, August might have the advantage.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and that was a really cool, interesting twist, too, to see Alice, I think, manipulate him into, you know, cutting off his face and using it to do X, Y, and Z. But then I thought a little bit about, like, how she learned how to do that, which is obviously from August, right? And the fact that he did that to his son. But I'm curious, like, what motivated him to even think to go that far?
Motivated August to putting a face on his son. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Like, cut faces off of people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I feel like right from the start, I mean, when I first was cast in the role, the first director that I worked with was Carl Seton. He did that episode, that first one that I was in. And he's from Chicago. He's from the same neighborhood in Chicago where I was born. So that's kind of cool. You know, and Carl at the time was just about to be a father himself. And he and I had a couple of really nice talks about the father side of August. And he knew the kind of trajectory, and he knew that we weren't going to get to see a lot of, you know, August as a caring dad. He knew the story was going to, August was going to go somewhere else with it. And it was really important to him. And I was so glad, because it was to me too. I mean, even in my audition, I really was trying to focus on the father-son relationship. I didn't have all the information when I auditioned, but you know, I thought, well, that's something I can connect to. I'm a dad, and I cut people's faces off. It's kind of like everything is right in my normal, you know, my life. But the, and so Carl, it was really important to him, at least in those early scenes, to think about him as a father, right? And so I don't know, you know, when I think back on it now, I think it probably started from a place of really wanting to make the best life for his son. And I know that sounds strange now that we know everything we know, but I do think that's where he was going. And I loved around episode 15, I think, where we got to meet August's mother, Mabel.
Yes.
Really well played by Deborah Mooney, who I loved working with. And that was a great day when she came on set. Everybody loved working with her. And, you know, it showed you that August probably didn't have a great childhood himself, you know? And I don't know if you guys caught that Mabel apparently is guilty of the injury on Mouse's face. Did you pick that up?
I don't think I did.
I don't think I did either.
Apparently he brought the tea cold, just like Alice did at one point. Uh-huh. And so she, I might have the, what he did wrong, but I think that was it. And she burned him on a radiator. And so I think August really did want to try to give his son a normal life. And it just got away from him, you know?
Yeah.
That was a long answer. Is that all right? Is the show over? We're done? Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, speaking of motivation, so because I did a little bit of, you know, I was looking at the background of Hush, which is the masked version of Tommy, and he actually had a pretty rough childhood, too. I mean, I don't know how much homework you guys did on the comics as far as you guys as actors, but with him, I know that he really disliked his parents, and I guess he clipped the brakes on their car and tried to kill them. And the dad died, but the mom survived. And Dr. Wayne is the one who saved her life. So that's what started against the Waynes, even though Bruce is like his bestie in his mind.
Right, right. No, yeah. I didn't know that. And we did, you know, I was really lucky because I was on another DC. I was on a show for two seasons called iZombie, which was on DC. And so I developed a relationship with DC Comics. And shout out to Renee and Dan and Kim at DC because they did send me this really nice bound volume called Arkham Asylum Living Hell, which contained all of the Jane Doe backstory and a lot of really interesting stories that you're even seeing play out in sort of this week's episode and the week before in Arkham. Some of those things about the doctor's face, you know, not being who you think you're talking to, a lot of that was in this book. So I really appreciated them sending that to me. And I then shared it with Nicholas, who plays young Mao. It was pretty, I'm sure your viewers, some of them have read that book or have that book, and it's pretty gruesome. So I talked to his mom first, made sure it was okay. And she said, oh yeah. So he, you know, he was reading it in the makeup trailer and he just devoured it. And then I gave it to Sam and, and I think it's making its way to Rachel now. I'm not sure if she's gotten it yet or not, but so to answer the question, it was really nice of DC to send that to me and give us the check. Oh, speaking of DC, in honor of tonight and tomorrow's Cinco de Mayo, I got this from DC. Hello.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. DC sent that. So, not Batwoman, but, anyway.
Okay. Same universe.
Cool. I'm sure people are probably like totally geeking out in our chat right now. So, speaking of Katie, before we dive back into the episode, is there anything going on in the chat that you want to bring up?
They are all talking about like the Tommy, they started talking about the Tommy versus Cartwright thing. And a lot of them kind of are on the fence about which one's more evil. Cause they were saying Cartwright takes faces and Tommy, he's just like in love with Bruce Wayne and kind of like a creepy stalker. So I guess there's mixed reviews on that, which I can see both sides of that argument. So yeah.
Right. Interesting. Okay, well, so getting back into the episode, and we do actually get to see Mouse Johnny come in with the face and him and Alice working together. And I thought it was really cool to see it come together pretty quickly as far as them being able to take over things and her manipulate people and like let people out and take chips out of necks. And I was like, wow, that's pretty darn cool. So
she's a boss.
She is a boss. You've had a chance to work with her too. What's that like?
Oh yeah, great, just great. I mean, I have you guys had her on? Have you chatted with her?
No, not yet. Sam came on.
Sam came on. Oh, great. Yeah. Good old Sam. Doesn't he have a great laugh, by the way?
He does, and you know, he said he learned a lot from you. By the way,
that's nice. That's nice. Well, I feel the same way about working with him. Same thing. Same thing about Rachel. I mean, she's just so full of life and so full of joy. And whenever you're around her, she's got ideas and she's got funny stories and she loves to laugh. And then she goes and plays this really multi-layered villain, and does it so well, you know, and, you know, just loves having a good time on set. She's very professional, gets the work done, but, I loved working with her and, she's got a really cute dog and he was on set a couple of times. So yeah, just a all around one of those people that you just dream of working with. So who's that cool, that friendly, that much fun to do a scene with. And we had to do some, some horrible, hitting her and, there's your mother's head in the fridge. You know, there's I wouldn't have been surprised if she wanted to come to set and kind of distance from me or find herself quietly in the corner before scenes like that. But she just laughs, tells stories, and then dives right in, and she's super focused. So
that's awesome. That's a gift. Yeah. And what about you? Do you have to take a moment to like get into character, do your thing, and then take a moment to get out?
Yeah, nobody's allowed to look me in the eye. I prefer to be left alone in a dark room for 2 to 7 hours before every scene. So it takes up a lot of time. It's very exhausting. No. And you're an actor too, somebody told me, right?
Yeah.
So, No, I would say, and I would ask you the same question. I think honestly, and I wouldn't have liked this answer when I was a younger actor, because I, you know, you're kind of trying to figure out how to do it and how does it work. For me, it really depends on the role and the scene and the day, you know. The day means everything, because most of our experience when we're making this is with the crew, our coworkers, right? It's the energy on the day and how everyone's doing, and if something fun is happening on set that day, or there's some, you know, laughter or camaraderie going on, that can change it all too. So I wish I had a simple answer about what I do and how I do it, but I think the way I do it on this particular day somehow ends up not working 3 days later. So I've just learned to kind of not hold on to it so tightly and figure out, because the answer is sometimes yes. Sometimes I like to kind of just be quiet and think to myself and really prepare myself. And other times I think you can also psych yourself out a little bit. I mean, you know, if you get too focused and intense, you can really make it so important that there's no life left when you get there. So yeah. How about you? I mean, what is your...
You know, it's the same thing. Like sometimes I'll have to go into a place and like think really hard for a little while, but then other times I feel like, oh my God, I'm like suffocating with thought. And then, like you said, just nothing happens. So the more that I free myself and be in the moment and let the other person affect me, the better it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that can make a big difference who you're working with, right?
Oh, 100%. There's some people that are just so emotional that you can't help but get emotional with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
But I digress. I'm totally getting away from the episode. So forgive me. And Katie, you can like.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally though. So then let's talk about Mary. Since we all loved Mary so much. Thoughts, comments, concerns. How excited were you and how sad were you when she kept trying to get into the group and they wouldn't let her?
I liked that she, as soon as, you know, she felt let down when she made the really, what she thought was a clever idea about the bat suit, and then Kate goes away, or no, then she goes away and Luke has to be like, hey, she wants her sister. She wants to spend time with you. And I like that they had that scene to kind of show Kate, we get where you're at, but you also need to consider the fact that she just wants a bonding time. She wants to be a part of something. She doesn't want to be left out. She no longer has her mom to be with her. She needs someone. And I did like that kind of arc where it started with Kate being like, I don't want to do this. And then she saves her butt and you're like, yeah, Mary, yeah, you work it, girl. And then that's when Kate realizes, okay, you know what? We'll have you as an ally. It's better than, you know, yeah, I liked it.
I did too. You know, I was very sad for her when she was really trying to celebrate with her champagne. Like I thought that was so adorable. and I think that she's shown that she has so much to offer. So at first I didn't understand, like I understood that Kate wanted to protect her sister, but I just thought she's so qualified and she'd be such an asset. Why would you do that? So later on when she explained, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can go with that. but for you, John, what personally did you like about this particular situation, or maybe didn't like?
Yeah, hated it. No, I loved it. I mean, I was kind of cheering for, you know, because I think everybody has been sort of wanting to see where, you know, if she'll find her way to belong. And it's sort of different too, I think, when you work with these people, because, you know, I will say it's not as easy to get deeply lost in the story because you're remembering a nice memory about the person, or, you know, whenever Mary comes on and I just think, oh, Nicole's so funny. She's such a funny person. I never got to do any scenes with her, unfortunately, but you know, we would sort of high five in the makeup trailer or on the soundstage, I'd see her go by or something. So I just think also, yeah, you know, the person a little bit. So you're kind of like cheering on their work and stuff like that too, I think. So, but I was cheering for Mary completely. I was like, she's in.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot they can do with that. I think there's a lot of places they can go with that now, you know?
100%. And I think it takes a lot of bravery too for that particular character, because if you think about it, she's been in hospitals and she's been in the thick of it and helping people and seeing the results of violence or what have you, but she's never actually seen it outside of her mother, which don't get me wrong, it's pretty traumatic. But to walk into this room with all these mafia people who clearly have guns, weapons, and all these things, and to hold your own, like, I think that took a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Aurora in the chat says that she thinks that Mary and Regan could bond over their messed up sisters.
That is true.
Like, that is true, because there was a lot of sister situations.
You know, it's so funny, because when Regan's character came back into the show tonight, I thought, oh, like, this girl's going to be, a rebound, and I'm all, like, feeling bad for her. And then she's the one who's the bad guy. And I was like, oh, well, I didn't expect that one. But I guess it's a good writing team.
Yeah.
But who here was completely shocked by that particular storyline?
The sisters thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I was. I was shocked. I was like, what? What?
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, I'm so used to seeing the girl with the wig and the white, and you see her face, but you don't. So then when they were sitting on the bench by each other, I was like, they kind of look like they could be related. And when they were, I was like, oh, okay. But for you, John, like, how much do you know ahead of time? Because I know at this point, obviously, your character has been killed off, but did you know, or do you know, I won't ask you for spoilers, but of all the things that are going to be playing out?
Yeah, that's a great question. Some, a little bit. And even as I said, you know, during my audition, I didn't know. I think Cartwright was only going to be there for one or two episodes. I think that was originally it. And I ended up doing five or six at the end. So I think some of it wasn't even created, you know, and that's how it goes. They keep going. But, you know, I think James and Chad, who wrote this episode tonight, also wrote episode 11, the famous kind of cat killing scene. And the cat's fine, everybody.
I know, I was supposed to, you have no idea. Like, I love animals. I was like, oh.
Yeah. But I think the thing Katie's not telling me is probably how much people are saying, I'm so glad Cartwright's dead. In fact, when I heard I was going to come visit you, I looked up an episode to see who you guys were. And the first thing is, ding dong, August is dead. So... I thought, oh, this will be a friendly
No, they're happier here. They love her.
Great. Hello. What was the question? No. So James and Chad wrote that episode, and I'm sorry, what was the question?
Totally went backwards on me. We were talking about the villains. I got lost too.
Do I know what's coming up ahead?
Yes.
Yeah, so my long stories eventually always find their way home, sometimes. So at that point, James did tell me a bit about what was coming. You know, you'll get little sort of hints, and, you know, the department heads, like the hair department or the makeup, they will read kind of, you know, something ahead of time that maybe Caroline has said something to them, and there's little whispers. It's always very carefully, you know, I don't know for sure, but maybe. And so that's when I found out that, for example, August was going to have a mother figure show up, and that was going to explain a lot about his kind of origin and what his life was like. So I was really excited about that. But as far as now, no, I'm not really sure. And I know that, you know, that the season wasn't finished filming, unfortunately, before, you know, the quarantines and the isolation showed up in our lives. So it will be interesting to see if it ever gets finished, or if they're just going to stop where they were. In fact, I think they were in the middle of an episode. I don't know if you've talked to Sam or anybody about that.
I feel like he said they were in the middle of the finale.
Yeah. They had like a few days left, I think, is what someone had said, but I can't remember specifically.
Yeah.
So,
we hear some things. And then a lot of times you hear it and you get excited and it doesn't happen. So So they're rewriting all the time, you know.
But what was your reaction when you found out that your character was going to be killed off?
it's happened a lot in my career.
So. Someone mentioned that in the chat. They already said, yeah, he's used to dying in his specifically on the CW.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Whoever thought of that.
It was, I can't remember who it was, but they.
Was it my mother? Because she's really upset about that, actually. She's,
I don't know. Maybe.
No, it wasn't my mother. No, and to be honest with you, I was surprised he lived as long as he did, because the kids and I, who those two fantastic actors, Ava and Nicholas, who play the kids, and then a little bit later with some of the other actors, we started kind of, dreaming up how could this possibly go down, how can this end with them? And, we pictured them, the kids killing him and cutting his face. I don't know. We had all kinds of elaborate plans for how it was going to happen. So I kept sort of getting surprised each time a script would show up and he was still around. And then they got away from the flashbacks a little bit. And then I heard whispers on set. They say, well, this actor, Sebastian's on. And then I started to realize what was happening. And I thought that was a fantastic, and he watched some of my stuff. He told me later, and he sort of worked on the voice and, some different things. I knew the character had to change his voice somewhat, but he was sort of working on the speech patterns I was using and stuff like that. So how was it dying? I mean, it was a cool death. You got to admit, to have Kate kill you. There was a lot of that, when the script came out, whenever you die on a show, certain people on the crew find out before you do. And so the previous week's episode, people are kind of, hey, have you read it? And when you start hearing that, you go, okay,
oh man, so
it's probably time. But he went out with a bang, and it was three really long kind of sticky days with Ruby, with all that blood and kind of, it was a lot. It was an awful lot to get all those scenes done. So it was great. It was fun.
I will say this. The only bone I had to pick with that scene, though, was that when she was facing August and she picked up, you asked her for water, and there were a glass of water, but behind her, there was a plastic bottle, three or four of them. And I was like, why? Why?
Yeah, this is her environmental side. How much plastic we have in the oceans right now? So I think she was willing to. She was thinking ahead to the environment.
Can't be that.
Obviously.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. You didn't see them? You didn't see them behind her? I guess not.
I
didn't notice it either. So
I did. I was like, "There's four of them or three of them, lined up."
It's like the Game of Thrones coffee cup,
Yeah, yeah, that's right. We had Gotham City water bottles behind us.
Yeah.
This is totally random. We'll get back to the show, but some of the things that Katie and I both noticed is that this particular show is very liberal with the language.
Mm.
I swear I heard on this episode somebody saying something about Johnny, don't be a dick, and I was like, oh, whoa. And then he was like, they call people bitches and stuff, and I was like, this is the CW, what is happening, you guys?
I mean, anyway. Supernatural's been doing it for a while, so I guess I don't really notice it.
Maybe because I've just been watching, I don't know, I was watching Arrow for such a long time that it caught me off guard. Anyway, let's talk.
I think sometimes when you're filming things, you there's little conversations where you say, this might not make it to air. This might not actually play at the end.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't. Sometimes things, there are other things that we filmed or that were written that don't end up actually making it to air. But they're letting a lot of it. I mean, all the blood in that scene with Cartwright, that was pretty gory, the staples and the whole, In fact, I just thought of another thing when you said, what's it like to die? I think I first found out because they said you've got to go and have a prosthetic neck fit for you. So that's never a good, a good sign when they're going to build a fake neck for you with blood tubes. I thought, oh, okay, here it comes. Yeah.
Classic Slayer 71 was asking, like what it feels like to have all that like fake blood on you. That's what the, her question was, or her, I don't know if it's the gender on this person, so we'll just say them.
Okay, and what was the name?
Classic Slayer is the YouTube handle.
Classic Slayer. Well, Classic Slayer. It's funny because a lot of, I think as I was saying earlier about the way you approach acting jobs, the jobs feel very different. And some of them are intense and very serious and heart-wrenching. And others are sort of light and kind of quick and loose. And some of them are just fun, you know. And Cartwright gave me a lot of the heavy and deep and kind of intense stuff. But that episode was just a lot of fun. Just, you know, going back and forth with Ruby like that. And there's so much dialogue between us and that thing.
Yeah.
And just having that on, I mean, that's just kind of the make-believe play and the blood and the stunts and the, I mean, that's just, you really, you know, roll up your sleeves and have fun and you laugh. The more intense a moment is like that, the more you laugh on set. So
yeah,
wearing the piece, it's, you know, it's cold when they first put it on and then it takes a long time. It took a couple of hours to apply it. And there's great, amazing effects people that do that stuff. And they watch the lenses very carefully. They're watching the monitors to make sure that seams aren't showing. And if they are, they're fixing it. And they're working under a lot of pressure. And you know, if the blood doesn't work, you know, that's a problem. So they're running. But you do eventually forget that you're wearing that thing. The blood itself, though, was really cold and really sticky. I get there's outtakes there somewhere with Ruby's hands on my neck, and then they'd say cut, and she'd go to remove them, but she couldn't because they were just like glued to my skin, and we'd sort of like we're stuck because it just would start to. But great crew, and you know they do everything they can too to make the actors comfortable. You know, it's ridiculous. As soon as you're done with this thing, they're putting robes and heat lamps, and
yeah.
So my overall answer would be it's fun. Sometimes uncomfortable and cold, though.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Did they have like three different necks for you? Because did you say they had three takes?
Did I say they had three takes?
Or you only had, like, sometimes you died for camera?
Oh, dozens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But did they have to replace it every time you did it?
No. No is the answer.
Gotcha.
You use that piece for when the glass cuts, and then also for the stapling. So that all got done just on one day, and then the real dying and all the conversation happened across three or four other additional days. And in those days, I wasn't actually wearing the prosthetic; it was just bandages, I think.
Gotcha.
So no, it was just the one. It was just the one neck, and then my own.
And then last question for you before we get back to the episode is, do you guys improv a lot? Like, how liberal are they with that? Or are you guys like word, verbatim?
Some shows and movies welcome that and others don't. And it's not as though, there's some intense rules or, you know, warnings or anything like that. But Caroline's vision is quite strong and quite, thorough, and she's thought this stuff through so much that people don't really, I never witnessed anybody in the five or six episodes I did ever asking to improvise or even trying or thinking about it, because it comes to you and the writers, and it's not just Carolyn writing it, you know, they've got an incredible team of writers working. And one great thing about this show is that the writer's always there. That episode's writer, or at least one, if it's a pair, they're there and you can talk to them and you can find out. Once in a great while, you'll ask about the rhythm of a line. I think there was one time when I asked to move the end phrase before, you know, the middle phrase, and the writers were really understanding about that. But I think when you get great scripts and you've got someone like Caroline who's got it all in her head, there's not a lot of, and so. I talk a long time, don't I? The answer is no. There was no improv. There wasn't a lot of improv on this.
Well, the chat, I know, is talking a lot about Julia. So let's talk about her a little bit, her betrayal. out of nowhere, we just found out that she's working for somebody else. And she was like double dipping in the betrayal because she's also like super flirting hardcore with Sophie and like trying to take her to dinner. And I was like, I don't think I like her anymore. Who are you guys?
I mean, she's no longer the, Sophie's no longer my least favorite person on the show.
Aww.
So, just character-wise, because, yeah, I didn't like, yeah, I was like, what is going on right now? It's just
so random. Like, I didn't expect her to be betraying Kate. I thought that she still had some feelings for her, but at the same time, I didn't know if she was aware that Kate's ex was Sophie, and if she was aware, then I didn't like her for pursuing that. But then, now she works for somebody. I don't know. I was a little upset about that.
Yeah.
I get you. I mean, this isn't me with advanced knowledge or anything. This is just me watching the show at this point. But we don't necessarily know that whoever she's talking to does represent a betrayal. You know, whoever she's on the phone with, it could be someone looking out for Kate. And again, this is not me with any insider knowledge or anything. Yeah. But and I don't know. In a way, it was nice to see Sophie happy and smiling and yeah, relaxed and kind of, I thought, well, that's nice because she's had an awful lot of, you know, turmoil and she's been through a lot. And I know the coming out to her mother was really something for her. So I just thought, oh, this is really nice to get to see her enjoying somebody's company.
Yeah.
Carlos Hernandez says, I think Julia may be working for Bruce, which for me would not be that bad.
Oh.
Interesting, Carlos.
Well, you know, and we had like two different slips tonight of Bruce Wayne being Batman.
Yes.
From Tommy accidentally telling Alice. And I was like, oh, she didn't know. And then also Luke
telling Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we foreshadowing? Then I thought, you know what would be really messed up is if the plan was to have Bruce Wayne show up on the season finale, but the show got stopped and they can't film the season finale. I was like, oh, I don't know. Anyways, here's what your guys' theories are at home. Those of you who are co-hosting with us, I know you're on a little bit of delay, but definitely let us know in the chat your opinion.
Timothy Ryder also said could be Alfred from afar.
Oh.
There's some good predictions in our chat today. So, yeah.
John, sometimes they're like way swifter than we are. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, they're typing faster than I can read. That's
Yeah.
It happens a lot too when you're on a show. People say things to you that they picked up and you think, oh yeah, I didn't catch that when we were doing it. Yeah.
Have you ever had any, I mean, with your character in specific, I don't think there was like a huge history, if I'm correct. Am I correct before I move on to my question?
Do you mean like in the comics or in the show? He's not a comics character from what our chat said, unless I'm wrong. The chat said that.
I think a Mr. Cartwright gets mentioned in the Jane Doe story. And I think there's another TV series, maybe Gotham showed him once.
Okay.
In Jane Doe. But if anything, it was just Jane saying, you know, her father was terrible, something like that. I think that's it. That's the only, so, yeah.
Well, that said, the reason I asked is because, not for this particular panel, but I know that I did cover Arrow and there would be some people that were super sticklers to the point where like, if you didn't do something in the same light as the comic book, it would upset them a little bit. So I'm curious if you've ever gotten any backlash or heard of any backlash because of a direction a story went.
I don't go online and read kind of how people felt about an episode or something, because maybe you know this, that's a tricky thing to do.
Yeah.
But the few people that I have talked to that are huge fans of either the Arrowverse or the Batman comics and the history of the DC, they've all said, wow, what a good idea to take the Jane Doe and kind of do a couple of different things with her. I mean, for a while, is that Johnny. I mean, some of Alice's story sort of feels like the Jane Doe story too. So just in personal conversations, people have loved it, that the adaptation, at least in this part of the storyline. But no, I can't think of anything where, you know, once in a while somebody will recognize me and they don't normally say, why did you guys go against, you know, issue number, you know, 70? They usually say, oh, man, I hated you. I really hated you. I get a lot of that. And I say,
but that's
like,
it's a huge compliment because that means that you were doing a great job at your job.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. Or I'm just hateable. I mean, it's one of the two, but I'll go with yours. Thank you. Yeah, totally.
Really quick, I'm going to tell the chat, this is your opportunity because in a little bit, I know we're going to have to wrap, but I want to make sure if you guys have specific questions for John, like start typing away.
I've been asked if it was less pressure on you to play a villain that doesn't have a character in the comics or is not much known about and pretty much starting from scratch. If it was less pressure or more pressure.
Great question. Well, like I said, I did read, you know, the Arkham Asylum book so that I was sort of understanding the world, but I actually grew up a huge Batman fan and loved the comic books. So I think the idea of Gotham and Gotham City and what that world feels like, it has kind of a feel to it, right? And kind of an understanding we all have across all of the Gotham, you know, stories. So it wasn't extra challenging for me because many shows that you act on, that's how it is, right? There's no comic book it's based on or anything. So for me, it was actually just extra to have information about Jane Doe and who would be maybe my, you know, now Johnny, you know, Cartwright. So, no, not extra challenging. It's also fun to see what the writers are creating. And like I said, I was communicating with some folks at DC Comics who were sending me a little bit of information because they also look at the scripts too before they get released. So, no, I thought it was great to be creating new characters in this world. I thought it was an honor. And then to go to Gotham and, you know, just to be there by the bat signal. Or one day one of the crew said to me, he said, hey, man, you know that the bat cave is right there on that soundstage? And I said, really? And he's like, let's go. And so, you know, so just me and another actor just really geeking out going to the bat cave. It's
nice.
It's great. Yeah.
Surreal.
Then it's the cool. one big question, which I'm sure me and Ali Kona would ask you anyways, but Adam Rodriguez wanted to know if there was another project you're working on that you can talk to us about so that we know where to find you next.
Thank you. Yes, I am. There's a show on the Paramount Network called Yellowstone, Kevin Costner show, and I'll be in season 3 of that for a few episodes. So I've been flying back and forth to Utah to work on that. So that begins June. Oh, sorry, I don't remember, but it's mid-June, I think it starts on the Paramount Network.
All right,
yeah.
Cool.
So yeah. And a few other things that I've filmed that haven't been announced yet, but that's the one that I'm looking forward to now. Yeah.
Nice.
There's also, Katie, there's a question that Elizabeth Wright has been trying to pop in, and I think it was maybe off topic at the time.
Well, we had mentioned John already talked about how he doesn't really know too much about what's going on for the future of the show. So that's why I was like, already covered it. Yeah. So okay. Yes, Elizabeth, I did see your question, but we did kind of already talk about it. So the reason why I didn't mention it.
Sorry, Elizabeth. I don't have any spoilers.
For you though. Okay. So you played the villain in iZombie, and then obviously you're a villain in this show, which you do so well, but talking to you now, we can tell that you're much more of a, yes, jovial individual. So do you ever, like, I mean, at first when this started happening, were you like excited to play these really layered characters, or were there a part of you that was like a little offended, like, why am I always the bad guy?
Oh, no. I love it. I mean, they're always interesting to play, and I do play some characters who aren't villains, but I do play my share of bad guys. As I mentioned earlier, half joking, my mother's the one that really gets because she has to see me, you know, cutting my neck open on TV, and that's got to be weird. You know, she's usually saying things to me like, well, when you go to your next audition, she'll sometimes call them tryouts, even though I've been acting since I was a kid. She'll say, she goes, when you go to your next one, maybe tell them a joke, and then that way you can play somebody nice, which, you know, and a lot of times if it's a really bad episode, I'll call, or one of my sisters will be there with her. I'll call and say, now, Mom, this one, you shouldn't watch this one. And she'll say, no, no, it's fine. And then, of course, this last Batwoman episode was really, but, you know, I don't know how this is going to sound when I say it, but I really did get into this line of work because I like being, you know, part of Once Upon a Time. And I like just being, figuring out where I can best help the team to tell the story. And so if I get slotted into a role like this, I love it just as much as if I'm kind of, I don't know, saving the day or something like that. So no, it's all great. They're all, and you've heard the cliche that the villains are fun to play.
Yeah.
And Cartwright was really fun to play. So
awesome.
Is there a
the cat was fine, everybody. That's the one thing that I have been.
I would say, did like, I mean, I don't know if you're on Twitter or whatever, but did you get a lot of angry tweets about that one?
I did. Yeah. I got a lot of cat tweets, and I have a cat who I wish I could find him, but, in fact, it was funny, the day I got the script for that episode was the day that my wife and I had brought home this little kitty cat for my kids. I said to her, you're not going to believe what I got to do next week at work or whatever it was. And so, yeah, but it's, you know, obviously the animals are treated really well. And the minute they'd say cut, you know, the kids and I, you know, the actor kids and the crew and everybody was just petting this little thing and playing with him and giving him treats, and trainers are right there. And
yeah,
so he never knew that there was any, you know, what, anything that looked like danger to him.
Yeah.
So, and he was so cute.
Before I keep like asking away and cutting people off, Katie, do you have any questions yourself?
I think we covered pretty much everything. Yeah. I think we're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then
of course, there's always more, but you know.
Yeah. Well, what I want to know is what for you was the most challenging scene in Batwoman. The film.
The most challenging scene in Batwoman.
Challenging for you, yes.
I think, you know, different kinds of challenging. Physically challenging, strangely, it seemed like a nothing scene, but being tied up to the bat signal, it was just an unusual position they needed. And I was there for a long time and, you know, you're getting sort of cramps. So that's minor stuff though. It's, you know, physically challenging, wasn't a lot. Emotionally challenging, I would probably in the early, you know, appearances of August Cartwright, doing what he felt was best for his son. And I was really trying to invest in that. But perhaps it was the scene in the hospital with Sam playing Mouse. That was a great day. And it was a tough night. We'd been there a long time. I don't know if he told you about it, but it was in a disused mental facility, you know, and haunted for sure. And it was really late and cold, and he was really tied to that thing. They left him on the bed, and it was so much for him to do. You know what I mean? And you really want to be present for another actor when they've got to do that much, you know, sort of emotional work. So I found that challenging, but challenging in a good way, to really connect with him and try to find a father and son, even though it's super complicated that relationship. But to really try to find some bit of history with an actor who, I think at that point, we'd never done anything together. I think that was our first actual scene together. So, you know,
There's a few people in the chat that are asking what inspired you to get into acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I think I started really young, and it sort of became the obvious thing to my family. And I mean, sort of like 6 or 7 years old. And it was like a lot of kids doing, you know, plays in the basement with my siblings. But I really just found so much when I would do it. I just really enjoyed it and was a magician for a long time. As a kid, I had an act that I would do, and I would, but I do think that I was young enough where I remember once watching on television Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino. And I was really young when this thing was televised. And he was so good at it. I didn't even understand that it was not real. Like, I thought we were seeing a robbery or something. I was that small. Like, I was a really little kid. And when I think I said to my mother, how did they get the cameras in there when they're doing this bank robbery? And she said, oh, that's acting. And I said, oh, what do you mean? She said, well, like what you do. And I said, that's a job? You can do that? And she said, yeah. And so it's been it since then. And that was, 95 years ago. So
that's amazing.
Nice. That's cool. That's a fun story.
We got some other quick questions in the chat. Katie, I'm going to throw it to you, let you ask away.
I mean, I haven't really seen too many more that I've...
Just like fun little questions. Like Tony Stark is asked a few times, so he must really want us to ask is, are you happy that Cartwright was killed by a stapler and not a guillotine like on iZombie?
Hey, all right. Let's see. So the guillotine, the guy I played on iZombie wasn't killed by a guillotine, but I think he definitely ordered some people killed by that. But I think what Tony is asking is, that was a way that people died on that show. And on this, the staple. It was, to get strangled and killed by Batwoman. That's pretty cool. I've collected some good deaths, but that was that's going to stay in my list of favorites.
So I know that we're slowly running out of time. So if we didn't get to your question, I really, really apologize. But what we do need to do right now is get into some predictions. So I'll pretend we're in the studio. We have cool prediction music. You're after
Buzz TV. I like that music. That's nice.
Yeah, thank you. If acting doesn't work out, I have another career. Okay, so at this point of the show, we start throwing in our predictions, what we think is going to happen in the future. So I'll give you, John, a few minutes to contemplate, maybe come up with yours. Katie, I'm going to throw you on the spot, see what you think is going to blossom in the future.
I do not know. My only prediction is if the season, I think the season did get cut short, it's either going to be a massive cliffhanger because they couldn't finish the plot, or it's going to be like something, maybe like just the end of something happened and then it gets picked up left end, like, or it's going to drop off. Like, I don't think it's going to drop off, but you know what I mean? It's kind of hard to explain, but I feel like it's going to be a different cliffhanger in the sense that it would be if it was at the end of the season.
Okay.
So it'll be a different type of cliffhanger. And I don't know what exactly that's going to entail, other than obviously I do think that Alice and Mouse are going to get out of Arkham, possibly with Tommy. So
I could go for that. I feel like Regan is going to turn against her sister. Like, she did her thing. She turned the journal over. I feel like she's going to start feeling guilty. She obviously had some sort of feelings towards Kate because she had remorse when she gave the journal over. And let's not forget to mention the fact that the entire journal is in code. So all of that for absolutely nothing in some senses. Yeah. But I think someone's going to come. I think Luke might actually know how to read the code. Otherwise, his dad's bad dad. No, I don't know. But that's my prediction. So what about you, John?
I think they're going to realize that they misunderstood August, and they're going to put up a statue of him in the town square.
I like it.
No. I guess I could tell you what I'd like to see. I would love, I'm glad that we're seeing Mary, taking her place on the team. And I think we're going to see her live up to that role, do a really good job. By the way, I loved when she was taking a selfie in the Batcave. I thought that was great. But another thing I would love to see is I would really like to see some closure for Luke. I would like to see, he's such a great character and so well played by Cam. I don't know if you've talked to him, but I hope you get the chance to. He's such a good guy. But the way he plays that character, is such a loyal, it's that amazing best friend, and that ride or die, he's always there for Kate. And but is struggling with his own stuff. So it'd be really nice to see him get some resolution around his father and some peace with it, I think. Yeah.
Nice. Katie, can you give us some quick predictions from the chat?
Billy Jean Girl thinks that maybe the Batcave computer can decode the journal, which I like. Okay. And then more mentions of the many arms of death and thinking that Julia is involved with that.
Okay, Elizabeth Wright, because I know you've, like, this is one of her questions, so we're just going to throw into predictions, which is that Julia is working for, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Sophia, and she will play a much bigger, dangerouser villain in Batwoman's life than Alice has been because she's shown to be afraid of her. Mm. Oh, wait, wasn't that mentioned in one of your, was that on a suitcase or something in the flashback?
Yeah, episodes. Just like briefly mentioned, like multiple times in episodes.
Yeah.
I haven't caught it most of the times, honestly. So, but yeah. But yeah, that's what that went along with Ivan's, both like the many arms of death as the villain, as the next potential villain.
Yeah, I can't say from memory perfectly, but I think that's a great idea. Good, cool. Good thought.
Yeah, awesome. Well, hey, John, thank you so much for joining us. You've been like such a wonderful guest.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I love your long-winded explanations, by the way. Yeah. I do. I think they're fantastic.
You'd say, here's a quick question, and I'd say, here's a long answer.
Yeah, that's okay.
No problem.
And to those of you who for those of you who co-hosted the show with us, thank you so much. And if you are not watching this live, that's okay. You can still leave comments below because we like those too. And Katie, thank you always for being a great co-host.
Yeah. Thank you both for having me. It's been fun. I really enjoyed talking to you guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Where can our people find you on social media in case they're not following them? Are you?
Yeah. I'm on Instagram. It's j.e.tracy. And on Twitter, I'm John Emmett Tracy. So it's all three long, difficult names. So good luck spelling them. But yeah, those two.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, awesome. Thanks.
You're welcome. And thank you guys. We'll see you next week. Mwah, mwah, mwah. I'm your host, Allie Kona Bradford. You can find me at yours truly, Allie Kona, with little underscores in between. And I'm really honestly mainly on IG. So find me there. Katie, where we can find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and now Twitch at KT_Christine with a C. And thank you, everybody, Elizabeth. And I know we had a few new faces. Timothy Ryder, I saw you guys. We had some new faces. And so hopefully we'll see you folks next week.
All right, talk to you guys later. Bye.
Founder Kevin Undergaro and me, bye-bye. Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.